Hey everybody, thanks for tuning in. Quick shout out, Danville Jiu-Jitsu is back open and God bless it. I've been training at Danville's Jiu-Jitsu since the beginning. My buddy Mike and I and a couple other guys just kind of started as a club and got shut down over COVID. And, you know, we've been at it almost 10 years and so we're opening back up. And God, man, it's fantastic to be back on the mats. If you're interested in hitting up Danville Jiu-Jitsu, just check out the website. If you need more contact information, just hit me up. You can shoot me an email or a text or whatever. My contact's not that hard to find. But if you need to, matttodduniversity.com. That's my cell. Anyway, the next 10 minutes are inspired by Bloody Hands and a Funny Student. I hope you enjoy it. Welcome to the engine. When I got into rowing, I had never rowed before, obviously, initiating it. And the person who got me into it was saying, okay, look, you need to do these workouts, right? And obviously a ton of time on the ergometer, the rowing machine, and running and weights and everything. And he said, you got to do a lot of push-ups on concrete. And he was very specific about the concrete. I was like, okay. Why push-ups on concrete? He says, well, you got to toughen up your hands. But what do you mean toughen up my hands? And what I didn't realize is rowing, obviously you're pulling on an oar with incredible amount of pressure and there's sweat and there's water and there's just whatever. And the different ways that you hold it produce these mangled, gnarly, calloused hands, right? I mean, we're talking just disgusting, horrible blisters and you know, raw flesh and stuff. And that was just kind of the way it was. Now, luckily, once you got better and better and better at rowing, you could figure out how to hold the oar instead of gripping it like for dear life, like you're holding a hammer and swinging it. You could hang kind of like a monkey and straighten your hands out a little bit. And that did still produce calluses and stuff, but it wasn't that bad. But until you got to that point, your hands got beat to snot. Nobody wears gloves. That's just not something that people really did. And it took some time to understand this. It took some time to understand how you get through rowing practice without having your hands just destroyed. When I was a freshman, going into winter break, I remember one practice I was on fire. It was one of the practices that really stuck out. And I was hauling on this oar. I just remember feeling just invincible. It was a really tremendous, tremendous experience. Again, I was 18 years old and over 20 years later, I still remember it. And I remember feeling pain in my hands. I remember feeling pain everywhere, in fact, but I remember it just didn't matter. It didn't matter compared to what was happening because the boat I was in was just destroying the other boats. And we were not really in like the A and B boat. We were kind of like the B minus C boat. So we were not really supposed to be winning, but we were just wrecking everyone else. It was a tremendous thing. And when we finally finished the practice, we pulled up to the dock to get out of the boat and I looked down at my oar and my oar was just red. The handle on it was just a normal tan kind of rubber color normally, but I had pulled on it so hard for so long that my hands had ripped open and just bled everywhere on the oar. And I didn't care. I was like, I will do it 10 times over for what just happened. And it was really one of those amazing, amazing things where you realize you have to get past the horrific pain and sight of your hands bleeding and the salt water. We would row in the Oakland estuary and the salt water would get in the wounds as you're rowing. It hurts so bad. Oh my gosh, I can feel it now. But that was just something you had to go through. If you wanted to be a good rower at Cal, you wanted to make the boat and you wanted to have a career there at all, your hands were going to have to get bloody. They were going to have to get bloody. You were going to have to see it. You were going to have to understand what was going and you were going to have to pull harder. And as gruesome and nasty as that sounds, it sticks out to me now as one of those things. There was a real rite of passage because there was no way to get to the other side of being incredibly tough, incredibly fit, a savage rower, and not have that happen to you. Everybody had to accept it, right? At some point, your hands were going to bleed, and at some point, it was going to hurt really bad. And the only question was, were you going to keep going or not? And again, it's not something that I would love to do again, but it is something that I'm proud that I kind of got through. And I think that's really easy to understand for a lot of people. I think in any sport, you're going to have these types of things, right? In football, I didn't play football, but I've talked to all of them. I mean, I have worked with tons of football players and my students, and they talk to me all the time about the things they go through. It's like, I see it. I see the bloody hands, right? And in wrestling and jiu-jitsu, I mean, jiu-jitsu, one of the biggest one is cauliflower ear. You just get this mangled cauliflower ear. Your ears just get smashed and you just kind of have to deal with it. And some people get them drained to make sure they cosmetically don't change. And some people leave them the way they are and they get this massive like golf ball on the side of their head. But it's just something that people have to go through. I don't know a single world-class or even black belt jiu-jitsu practitioner that doesn't have some kind of messed up ear. That's just the way it is. And I was teaching my students the other day, and this one problem came up. This guy, Will, again, I talked about Will before, but he's been in class a lot lately. This one guy, Will, asked about, he prefaces his question with, listen, I know I've asked you 3 times already, but can you please look at number 12? And before I even go to the page, I know exactly the question he's asking. And I'm like, no, I am not doing this again. You are capable of doing this. And I start yelling at him. And he's kind of like laughing and saying, please, I really need help. I'm like, no, do it. Do it yourself. You know how to do it. And in fact, I gave him my iPad, which was mirrored on the screen. And I made him demonstrate how to do the problem step by step. And I, of course, helped him along the way. Little prod here, little prod there. But the students laugh about it. Because very frequently when somebody asks a question, I just say, no, absolutely not. They've never experienced that before. They've never experienced a teacher looking at them saying, no, I'm not going to answer your question. That's ridiculous. You can do this. And they kind of like imitate me sometimes. I'm like, hey, everybody flipped page. They're like, no. They start saying no to me. But what I realized as I was kind of thinking about these hands and my conversations with Will and other students recently is it's so common for us to understand rites of passage with athletics. It's so commonplace for understand, you know, young people being forced through these thresholds of pain and discomfort and all of these things. And it doesn't even have to be young people. It can be people in their 20s and 30s, but we understand that athletically. You're going on a run. You want to die. I can't do it. And you keep going. And I think we're robbing our young people of having that kind of experience in academics. I think the farther we go down the roads we have been, the more we're trying to eliminate hardship. We're trying to eliminate something that'll create disparities. We're trying to eliminate any kind of imbalance. We're not making school harder. We're not making academics harder. We're not actually trying to weed out people who aren't working harder. We're trying to make it easier for everyone. Which is so curious to me. Because we would never in a million years do that in athletics. Everybody understands the concept of tryouts. You got a soccer team, you got a basketball team, you got a water polo team. You're going to have tryouts. You don't have enough spots. Whoever works the hardest and shows the most promise and has the most natural talent gets the spot. We move on with our lives. But we do the exact opposite. In academics, we don't care about being selective and being fair. We don't care about meritocracies. We don't care about people working really hard or recognizing that it's like, hey, we had 30 spots. We had to take the top 30 best. You know, that was it. We start arguing, well, this guy didn't get a fair chance. Okay, that's fine. But guess what? I'm not 7 feet tall. I didn't get a fair chance on the basketball team. Right? And I know there's so many things that go into it. And so that may seem not fair, but man, at the end of the day, people need rites of passage. People deserve to have things that they work hard for and they earn. And I don't think it should just be in academics, or excuse me, athletics. I think we need to bring this back to academics so people can be proud and inspired and encouraging in academics. We need to have things that are hard. We need to have young people go through them. And then we need those young people when they're not so young to turn around and tell the other young people that are coming up, hey, this is going to be hard. You're going to bleed, but you can do it and you can keep going. And I think if we do that, we can make world-class academics, not just athletes. I'm Matt Todd, and this is the engine that drives me. Go out and crush it.